The year is 1237 and Dietrich Weise von der Mühlengasse is in a hurry. Although that would be an understatement, he was literally on the run. During the day, he had hidden with his friends and waited for nightfall. But why? What had happened? Dietrich was the head of the Weise von der Mühlengasse family, and he had taken the life of one of his opponents a few hours ago. He had literally smashed his skull in with a club. It had been a wild brawl, almost a battle right in the shadow of Cologne Cathedral. Unfair, muttered Dietrich to himself as he walked down to the Rhine. Fortunately, it wasn't far to the harbor, as he lived directly east of the old market in the alley after which he named his family Mühlengasse, so Miller's Alley. Yes, he had killed someone, that was true, but hadn't they tried to kill him a few moments earlier? In the House of the Rich, where the collegiate of magistrates always met? The House of the Riecher Zeche, that association of the richest and most respective inhabitants of Cologne who were increasingly preparing to divide up the power in Cologne among themselves. Dietrich had attended a heated court hearing there, and before the verdict was pronounced, his opponents had attacked him, with the aim of killing him. Only with great difficulty had he stormed out of the House of the Rich and onto the old market. He had run across the square with his brothers Heinrich and Ludwig, and then to the Mühlengasse, which was just around the corner. There they had fled into their house and called together friends, clients, and their servants. When they ventured back onto the street, the aforementioned street battles had broken out in the shadow of Cologne Cathedral. And yes, he had probably hit one of his opponents too hard on the head with his club, and now he was the guilty party? The archbishop was after him and wanted to have him hauled before the High Court tomorrow. Him, Dietrich Weise von der Mühlengasse, head of the most powerful family in Cologne? Never. He could not allow that. They would win this conflict, but first Dietrich had to be safe. So Dietrich Weise had nothing left of the Mühlengasse's alley. He and his brothers discontentedly board the ship in the Rhine and set sail. Their destination? Vienna. Emperor Frederick II was staying there at the time, only he could now help the family out. And with that, welcome back to the History of Cologne, a podcast about the history of Cologne, a city that's over 2,000 years old, but until it became what it is today, this old city on the Rhine has endured a colorful and rich past, hence it can therefore be seen as a microcosm of European history. In this podcast, you can listen as the city grows from the Romans up until our present time. The murder of Archbishop Engelbert a few episodes earlier in 1225 had caused great upheaval in Cologne. The conflict between the Archbishop and the Cologne patrician families, for example of the Weisen von der Mühlengasse, was just one part of these upheavals. What were they all and how did Dietrich's story from the intro end? More about this after the intro. Those who come after great personalities have a hard time. After Otto I came Otto II, who is almost forgotten today. After Charlemagne came Louis the Pious, and Federal Chancellor Merkel was followed by Olaf Scholz. The period that began after the murder of Engelbert of Berg in 1225 is similar. Engelbert's violent death and his dominating rule beforehand often made what happened in the two decades that followed fade into the background. This was until Konrad von Hochstaden, another important city ruler, appeared on the scene and laid the foundation stone of today's Gothic Cologne Cathedral in 1248. We would like to fill this gap today, for it is an exciting time after the death of Engelbert in 1225, casting shadows of events to come. But dear listener, before we start here, I have thought about the following just like last year. I will probably take a short summer break again. Of course, this has disadvantages. It has been proven that some of you listeners will no longer be at the start after the break. That was also my experience last year when I did a summer break. But the positives outweigh the negatives. As much as I like the podcast, publishing a new, usually painstakingly researched episodes every 3 weeks, has its price. The podcast is still my leisure project. I also work two jobs in a field that has nothing to do with history, and yes, I still have a private life as well. That's why I always like to use the time in summer to take a deep breath, not to have the pressure of constantly having to deliver. And at the end of the summer break, however, I usually notice how I feel the joy, the urge of starting again with renewed energy on the podcast. So I'll probably start my summer break after the next episode on July 15th. I think I resume on August 12th, 2024. But we are not yet in the summer break, and we are immersing ourselves in the first half of the 13th century in Cologne. The news of Engelbert's assassination on November 7th, 1225 had spread like wildfire across the empire. And when you consider that there were no highways, cell phones, or train connections, it is truly amazing how quickly a successor was found for the office of Archbishop of Cologne. You have to remember, first of all, the news goes around that the murder has taken place. Then the archdiocese has to be informed and invited to hold a bishop's election, and then everyone has to travel to attend it in Cologne. At that time, the College of Priors was still electing the Archbishop of Cologne. This naturally included the provosts and abbots of the numerous churches in Cologne, and also the bishops in that church province of Cologne. Provosts and abbots from Cologne, of course, they don't have to travel too far since they are already in Cologne, but they also invited for that election provosts from monasteries like Bonn, Xanten, or Soest. The election procedure had been like this for several hundred years, but not for much longer. The Cologne Cathedral chapter, so the clergy based at Cologne Cathedral, had long been trying to seize control and abolish the College of Priors. Soon, in the 13th century, they were to prevail. And to this day, it is de jure the Cologne Cathedral chapter which, after a complicated process involving many parties, finally receives a list from the Pope containing three names. Today, the Cologne Cathedral chapter chooses the new archbishop from that papal list. That sounds like a lot of power for the Cologne Cathedral chapter these days. Yes, but it has its downsides. Beforehand, the cathedral chapter itself sends a list of three names to the Pope with suggestions who they want as their new bishop. And the last two times in recent history, a Cologne bishop was elected in 1988 and 2014, the cathedral chapter's list of suggestions was completely discarded and replaced by the Pope with a completely new list of three suggestions. So, both times, with Joachim Kardinal Meissner and Rainer Maria Kardinal Wölki, were elected Archbishop of Cologne, men who were not originally wanted by the Cologne Cathedral chapter became the new Archbishop of Cologne in recent times. Okay, I've digressed a bit. Back to the November of 1225 and how quickly a successor was found for the murdered Engelbert. A new archbishop had already been elected on November 15th, 1225, that was 8 days after Engelbert's murder. That was really fast. The speed of the election should not only be seen against the background of the infrastructure of that time and the fact that traveling took much longer than it is today. Engelbert had also left behind a huge power vacuum in the region. He had been Duke of Westphalia, Count of Berg, and both secular and spiritual power of Cologne and the Archbishopric of Cologne. Who should fill this vacuum? The choice fell on the provost of the Cassius Abbey in Bonn. His name was Heinrich von Müllenarg, and he was clearly a compromise candidate. The election meeting was chaired by the Archbishop of Trier, who was able to win over all parties within the Cologne Church, as well as the regional nobility in favor of this compromise candidate. The fact that he really was a compromise candidate, I mean the new elected archbishop, Heinrich von Müllenarg, could also be proven by the paucity of historical sources. Until his election, we learn nothing at all about Heinrich von Müllenarg, only that he was a provost in Bonn. But when was he born? No idea. His parents can probably be traced genealogically, but we are not entirely sure either. What we do know is that as provost of Bonn, he certainly had a large income, and that's not really unimportant in a leading position at the time. And so the newly elected archbishop quickly found himself between the fronts and in trouble. Let's take a look at that after a short break. It often happens that the inconspicuous candidate turns out to be bigger than expected. Angela Merkel, the federal chancellor of Germany from 2005 to 2021 or 2, I don't really remember, once started out in politics as Kohl's girl. That was the Helmut Kohl was the chancellor once from 1982 to 1998, and they all thought that she was just his intern girl. And oh, were they wrong how Angela Merkel turned out. Caesar, the Roman general and dictator Caesar, was considered a womanizer and always heavily in debt long before he became a great general and statesman. And Napoleon, a foreigner with a Corsican accent in the service of France, becoming the French emperor? Nobody saw that coming. Of course, Heinrich von Müllenag never reached the level of Napoleon or Caesar, but right at the beginning of his term of office at the end of 1225, he took the lead in a movement that demanded revenge for the murder of his predecessor. He took the maltreated body of Engelbert with him to Frankfurt and presented the body, which had been killed with 50 sword blows, to all those present. The fact that he even succeeded in taking his revenge a year later, we had already learned that the murderer was executed in front of the Severinstor gate in the south of Cologne, earned him a lot of respect. The tensions that had prevailed between the participants on election day in November 1225 had of course not simply died down afterwards. With Engelbert, the House of Berg had died out in the male line. The Limburg family would inherit the Berg property on the right bank of the Rhine from Cologne. The Limburg family had also hoped to win the bishopsy as well. This would have given them almost the same position of power in the region as Engelbert once had as being part of the dynasty of Berg. But we know now that didn't work out for the Limburg family. However, Heinrich von Müllenag managed to stall them once he had been elected. On taking office in 1225, he denied the Limburgs the enfeoffment of properties that lay within the territory of the Cologne Church for a year, like being the provost of Deutz, the neighboring city of Cologne in the east of the Rhine, and on the other bank of the Rhine River. The new archbishop only relented after they agreed, the Limburgs, not to form a permanent alliance with the citizens of Cologne against him. And that, dear people, was an important victory for Heinrich von Müllenag. Then, of course, there were also conflicts within the city. The intro to this episode had already hinted at this. The people of Cologne were probably a little tired of Engelbert's strict rule of the city. When the news reached Cologne in 1225 that the city lord had been murdered, some citizens publicly burned documents they had once signed with Engelbert. And this was not only the case in Cologne. In another city in the Archbishopric of Cologne, the Archbishop's palace was destroyed, or at least one of its towers. The city was Soest. But as we know, the citizens of Cologne were not a body that spoke with just one voice. The new Archbishop Heinrich von Müllenag skillfully sought out wealthy allies in the city. Literally, he made himself popular with the city's minters in particular, by granting them many privileges. So perhaps this is a good opportunity to take a look at what life was like for the rich citizens of Cologne. As you know from previous episodes, the rich citizens of Cologne were able to participate in politics mainly through the Collegiate of Magistrates, a body that the archbishops of Cologne had once set up in order to have officials at court. In the meantime, however, it developed into an institution that performed sovereign tasks on behalf of the archbishop in the city. The number of aldermen fluctuated from time to time in this collegiate of magistrates. especially the number of the so-called aldermen. At this time, they probably numbered around 25. However, these were only those who sat on the highest level in that body. In addition, there were numerous candidates within the College of Magistrates who were waiting to become part of the illustrious 25 at some point. In the first half of the 13th century, one family in particular dominated this collegiate of magistrates. Can you guess who? Exactly, the wise men of the Mühlengasse. We have already met them several times in this podcast. Their founder, also named Dietrich, was probably able to speak various languages around the year 1185 when he appears in the historical sources, and that was therefore considered very wise by his contemporaries that he could speak several languages, an attribute that was passed down in the family as an epithet. And during the German throne controversy, the family of the Mühlengasse had gone against the majority of the city's society and remained loyal to the Hohenstaufen dynasty, which had been a good decision in the long term for them. At that time, the wise men of the Mühlengasse made up around a quarter of all aldermen in the supreme body of the Collegiate of Magistrates. They did not have an absolute majority, but no one could get past them with that many seats they had accumulated. And although the Collegiate of Magistrates was originally intended as an instrument of the archbishop's rule over the city, the wealthy citizens of the city in particular learned and used it to extend their own power more and more. This power in the hands of a single cologne family was of course not really acceptable to the archbishop. However, it would be a few years before the incident in the intro where Heinrich von Müllenart tried to disempower the wise men of the Mühlengasse. Before that, he tried several other steps to consolidate his rule in Cologne. Let's take a short break for this before we look at that. Do you remember who in Cologne citizenry was the main source of power and wealth? I mean, who got that? Above all, the ministerials and merchants. They occupied the posts with the archbishop in the Collegiate of Magistrates and thus also in Richerzeche, the Brotherhood of the Rich. The quite a few who worked in the trades and crafts were left out mostly. In other words, those who made or dyed cloth, the goldsmiths, the shield painters from the Schildergasse, or simply the stonemasons, bakers, blacksmiths, and brewers. They had also managed to achieve some prosperity economically, partly through the formation of guilds, so professional associations, so to speak. Politically, however, they had hardly been involved in the running of the town. Remember that, please, because this will also be a major potential source of conflict in the city in the future. Not just the citizenry was against the archbishop, but also within the Cologne citizenry, patricians, mostly merchants and civil servants, were against trade and craftsmen, to put it very, very simply. Of course, this did not escape the archbishop's notice, and so he reversed a decision made by his predecessor Engelbert in 1216. At that time, Engelbert had banned the first known city council of Cologne. In doing so, back then, Engelbert wanted to put a damper on the autonomy efforts within the city. But listen and be amazed, Heinrich von Müllenarch reinstated the council in 1229, but without any great fuss, he just said, hey, you can do your city council again. Interesting is who sat on that council, or rather who was sent there. Above all, the representatives from the wards. If you no longer know what the wards were, listen to episode 54. This, of course, was far from breaking the power of the Richerzeche or the Collegiate of Magistrates, but now there was another element within the citizenry that was preparing to represent the city of Cologne. In the late Middle Ages, the city council was to develop great power, overtaking the Collegiate of Magistrates, but this was still a long way off in 1229. So allowing the city council back in was one thing. But there were also other ways and means. Heinrich von Müllenag also repeatedly tried to strengthen the craft guilds, those craft cooperatives that had previously been largely excluded from civic participation in town politics. This was because the Richardzeche and the Collegiate of Magistrates were largely made up of merchants and archbishop's officials. At the same time, the skilled trades and the people working in them made up a significant part of the city. They also wanted to be heard politically. This will, like I said, also become a new line of conflict within urban society in the future. But of course, the archbishop also gets to the root of the matter. Heinrich von Müllenag has been waiting for a long time for his chance to finally disempower the family of the wise man from the Mühlengasse. But how was he supposed to succeed? Of course, the events from the intro from the year 1237 came in handy for him. Perhaps the archbishop had hoped that the expulsion of the wise man from the Mühlengasse would finally bring about a stroke of liberation for him and his rule over the city. He had previously suffered several political setbacks. In 1231, King Henry, representing his father Emperor Frederick II, who was absent from the empire north of the Alps at the time, decreed that the citizens of Cologne were no longer liable for the debts and liabilities of the archbishop. Until then, this meant if the city's ruler got in debt, the citizens of Cologne had to help out with their possessions as collateral, to put it this way. Unbelievable, isn't it? This royal decision now put an end to the practice of creditors seizing the goods of Cologne citizens as collateral in the event of non-payment by the archbishop. It really considerably strengthened the legal security and freedom of the rich citizens of Cologne. The city ruler also had trouble in his own company from 1231, so to speak. For reasons that are not entirely known, there was a revolt against him going on for a long time in the Cologne church, and high-ranking clergymen from the Cologne cathedral chapter especially traveled to Rome especially to accuse him of serious moral offenses right in front of the Pope. How iconic, given that the archbishop himself originally came from the cathedral chapter. He must have been very much at odds with them at that time. Incidentally, there is no clear historical record of the accusation made against Heinrich von Müllenag. What did he really do? We don't really know. Although he was able to stand his ground in dispute, despite being temporarily even excommunicated by the Pope, the whole thing was nevertheless exhausting for Cologne's chief shepherd named Heinrich von Müllenag. Despite all their efforts, Cologne's wealthy upper citizens had made progress on their path to greater independence from the city ruler, and at the same time, there was a huge rift within the Cologne church. Not good times for Heinrich von Müllenag. The charge of manslaughter in a street fight against Dietrich Weiser von der Mühlengasse, that big great patrician of Cologne, in 1237 perhaps seemed like the perfect opportunity for the city ruler that had come into trouble. At last, action could be taken against this powerful family in the city, which had occupied so many posts and had so many clients and friends and allies in the city. As I said, the charge was manslaughter brought by the enemies of the wise men of the Mühlengasse. This was an offense that fell under the jurisdiction of the High Court, manslaughter. And under whose supervision was the High Court in Cologne again? That's right, under the supervision of the Archbishop of Cologne, oh boy. Let's take a short break here. Dietrich von der Mühlengasse and his brothers Ludwig and Heinrich, as well as other clients, friends, relatives, were all immediately summoned to appear before the High Court in front of Heinrich von Müllenag. A trial within the town would certainly have caused an uproar. There would have been a real danger of a riot gripping the city if the trial had been held outdoors right next to the cathedral in the city center. Perhaps for this reason, the archbishop chose a small settlement outside Cologne, in Horbel, as a location for the trial. I really had to search for a while before I found the place on a map from nowadays. It is now part, Horbel is now part of Junkersdorf district of Cologne, far outside the western part of the then walled city. Nowadays, Horbel is still very rural, characterized by fields and estates. It is around 9 kilometers from the city center. That was quite a long distance in those days. For Dietrich von der Mühlengasse and all the other defendants, this did not look like a fair trial. First, they refused to appear in court. And then, you know, they fled the city. It must have been an incredibly triumphant feeling for the town lord, the archbishop. He, Heinrich von Müllenarg, had finally been able to enforce his rule of the city as rigorously as in earlier times, like a Bruno Anno did. With the expulsion of Dietrich, his family and his followers, he had clearly demonstrated this. The archbishops were back in business. As a visible symbol, the houses of Dietrich and his brothers in the Mühlengasse alley were demolished. But Dietrich von der Mühlengasse was not willing to simply let the matter rest. As part of being the highest citizens of Cologne, they now saw themselves more and more as the city's nobility, only with the emperor as a supreme feudal lord at the top, not the archbishop. So they, the family of the Mühlengasse, but also many other high-ranking citizens of Cologne, started to act like being knights, noble knights. They began to bear their own coats of arms and lived in luxurious homes. They were independent of the archbishop, but also had a higher status than the other inhabitants, the normal inhabitants of Cologne. I mean, that's what they wanted. Dietrich von der Mühlengasse's goal was not to find a new home in another city, no, he wanted to seek justice from the emperor himself. Emperor Frederick II did not spend most of his long reign in medieval Germany. Out of 39 years as a ruler, he spent 28 years of that in Italy alone. Further years abroad followed, such as a half a year in the Holy Land, where he actually regained Jerusalem for Christianity through negotiations, at least for a few years. But in 1237, Dietrich was lucky to get close to the emperor, for it was one of those rare periods when Frederick II was actually in medieval Germany at the time. Well, from today's perspective, it is no longer Germany, but so be it. The emperor held court in Vienna in the spring of 1237. And lo and behold, the emperor listened to Dietrich and ordered that Dietrich and all those accused be rehabilitated. It was a heavy blow for Heinrich von Müllenarg, who did not attend the meeting in Vienna. Just a few weeks after the expulsion, the exiles returned to the town, their property was returned to them, and their houses had to be rebuilt. All the offices that the members of the Weisen von der Mühlengasse family had lost also had to be restored to them. This also meant, yes, in the collegiate of magistrates, a quarter of the posts were still in the hands of Dietrich and his relatives. Status quo ante bellum, I guess. Dietrich celebrated on the old market to the cheers of his supporters. "We've done it, Ludwig," he called out to his brother. He let his gaze wander over the crowd and spotted a middle-aged lady. He raised his hand to greet her, and she returned the greeting after a moment's hesitation. But soon he lost her in the crowd of the people on the old market. The lady Dietrich had waved to was called Blitildes, Blitildes Oberstolz. The hustle and bustle on the square had become too much for her, and so she decided to walk home. She walked south across the square of Old Market, crossed the neighboring Heumarkt Square, and turned into a street south of the square. There she approached a magnificent house that had been built entirely of stone just a few years ago, really fancy, really expensive. Its splendor, especially the beautiful Romanesque facade, made it stand out clearly from the surrounding half-timbered houses in the neighborhood. She met her husband Werner directly on the first floor when she entered the house. This was where the administrative offices of the Oberstolzen family merchants were located. The living quarters were directly above. "Well, did the arrogant Dietrich let himself be celebrated like a Roman emperor at a triumphal procession?" asked Bethilde's esteemed husband. "Oh, Werner," she replied, gently placing her hand on his shoulder, "do not grieve. Our time will come." And how right Bleatildis should be, but that's a story for another time. Many thanks this time to Jörg, Martin, Silvia, Markus, another Martin, Sabine, Klaus, Norbert, Andrea and Ulrich for your tips via PayPal. A warm welcome to Sandy, who is now supporting me on patreon.com for the long term. Thank you. I've left out some events from this period in this episode, otherwise they would have been bloated up this episode too much. Maybe, I can't promise you that, I'll add them later in a small, special episode. Next time, we will come closer and closer to the increasingly open conflicts in the city that took place in the 13th century and will lead up to the great, great Battle of Vorringen in 1288, reshaping the northwest of the empire. Archbishop against citizenry, and citizens against citizens. Cologne's economic elite cut itself off from the city community, I mean the rest of the city community, because around 15 families will emerge as the city's own aristocracy, who from then on want to determine the fate of the city and its citizens, and will not let anybody get in that illustrious group of 15 families. And who is at the top of those families? Well, there will be fierce disputes, sometimes extremely bloody. Stay tuned to this podcast. What did I use as literature in this episode? Cologne in the High Middle Ages by Hugo Steekamp and Karl Dietmar, so Köln im Hochmittelalter, provided me with indispensable help. However, as far as the events surrounding Heinrich von Müllenach were concerned, I didn't find the chapter very successful, to be honest, this time. In terms of understanding, I really struggled at times to organize the sequence of events and their background correctly and to put them into more comprehensible language. I hope that I have succeeded in doing this. Please feel free to send me an email at thofcgn@gmx.de and let me know what you think. I would be very delighted. So, in the end, as always, all I can say is thank you very much for listening, recommend me further, and auf Wiedersehen.